Welcome, everyone, to the second meeting of the Women in the Economy Commission. Thank you to Senator Henderson for recommending that we move over into this building. I think that it does a lot, and we've been able to also achieve the video and audio streaming, and we will have the audio part of the audio part of the archive. It is being streamed off the Division of Workforce Services website. And again, we'll have an archive of this too, so that people will be able to reference it and use it as a research tool. So, thank you, Senator, for those suggestions. I think that you help improve what it is that we're doing. So, does everyone have an agenda packet, including a minute? If you don't, please holler. Would anyone like to make a motion related to the minutes?
I'll make a motion for scrutiny.
Okay, that was a motion by Ms. Barnett, and the second by Ms. Thompson. All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Next item on the agenda. Ms. Bates from the Division of Workforce Services follows on that request from prior meeting regarding fields of study. Please press the ready speech button in front of you, and I will activate your microphone.
In your packet, there should be a single spreadsheet. This is an analysis that we performed in response to questions brought up in the prior meeting. There were several questions that they all coalesced around a single theme, which was fields of study. Oh, what can we ascertain by examining data to understand better how fields of study and the fields of occupation affect women's wages. So staff in my office were able to pull data from the American Community Survey for bachelor's degree and higher holders. This is an analysis that describes fields of degree. So what you have here are all the whole array of fields of degree for bachelor's degree and higher holders, and a breakdown of male and female, and then the total count. So just for an example, interpreting that first line of data, this would be someone who has a field of degree, bachelor's or higher in agriculture operations and related sciences. You see that males have 5,057 of those degrees, females have 1,221, which gives us a total of 6,278 degree holders in that field. And so then what we did was two different ways of slicing this data. One was to take all of the groups by gender and break out the percentage. So that first percent, 1.9%, shows that of all males who are degree holders, 1.9% of them hold a degree in agricultural field. And then similarly for females, of all the female degree holders, 0.5% hold a degree in agriculture. Then we flipped around the analysis and said, female-male breakout of this particular field. So of agriculture, 80% of the males have the degree in this field, and 19.4% of the females have the degree in this field. So two different ways to look at it. One few interesting things that popped out in our analysis of the data is looking at females, you see, just when you look at that column that says females as a percent of all females, you'll notice that there's less diversity across all of the occupations. There's over 25% of them concentrated in education. So we want to examine further the wages in these fields. We probably all know some anecdotes about the wages there, but we would want to look further into that, seeing as how that they're so heavily concentrated in that area. Other than that, there's really not a whole lot that jumps out after that. the next highest concentration for females is in the health professions, down there third from the bottom, 12.9%, and then the next highest concentration is business management and marketing, which is right below that at 11.9%. Men, there's a little bit more diversity in their spread, although they too have a quarter of their concentration in business management and marketing. So where females have a quarter percent concentrated in education, something that at least anecdotally we see lower wages for males, you see that quarter concentration in business management, where again anecdotally we see higher wages. The next highest concentration was in the social sciences for men at 10.2%, and then the rest were spread out. Next highest was engineering at 9.8%. So that's one way to analyze it. The other way to analyze it is the male-female ratio for each of those fields of study. And those are the last two columns. And what we did there is whichever of the two genders have a higher concentration, we highlighted in red. So you can see very quickly, back up to my agriculture example, males are heavily dominant in the agricultural field. And then you can go through and see some of your key fields of study. We've got, you know, our eyes went straight down to engineering, where you have a high concentration of men, 90% engineering. Now, this is field of study, not occupation, but we think of field of study as that path toward those different occupations. Some of those, you want to also look, keep in mind the total number of people in those. So, library science might jump out at you. There's virtually no men in library science. But the total number of people altogether is only 364, which is a small fraction of the total number of degree holders in Utah. Social sciences were almost 50-50, with 42.5% males and 57.5% females. But this was data, going back to the reason we pulled this, it was a theme of requests of data. Jim was one of those who was interested in looking at this. And I think that this may be a basis for which we can make some recommendations for policy, and this maybe can support what we're doing later on when Representative Steele discusses our matrix of policy issues.
Does anybody have any questions or comments? And I'd like to remind people who just came in, if you would like to speak, please press the request to speak button before the panel turns the mic on. Does anyone have any questions about that? Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it seems like last time we had some data regarding the amount of money that people make in any given profession. That's not attached to these fields of study. Is that data available?
Yeah, we can do some of that analysis, and some of it is pretty directly to like engineering field of study to engineering occupations. Some others get gray. The social sciences. Are they an attorney or are they a social worker? So there's some gray area, but I think that could be our next step, is to do some aligning when we can. There's also ways to go into this data and actually look at these people's wages and income. So we could also do that if we want to go that route and match it more directly. So a direct match would analyze this population's outcomes, or we could do a more general look at the patterns associating fields of study and occupations. But we can put that on as our next step in analyzing it.
If I may ask a follow-up question. So, and then once we have the data there, I assume then we break it down to the women in this field versus the men in this field and their average salaries.
There's some data on that. It's not quite as strong. When you start getting down into the state level, there's not as robust data. But we can do some at some level. It might be a little too generalized in terms of the field of study. We might not be able to get really down to that degree. But we could do, I think, it's a landscape that we can paint, putting it all together. So I think that makes sense as the next step.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Anyone else? Ms. Burkholder.
Thank you. My question has to do with the fact that this is the field of degree description, not occupational description. Is there any way to find out what kind of correlation there is between field of study and occupation? Is there a way to look at that relationship at all? Because anecdotally, there is information that suggests that there is not always a correlation there, and I'm not certain the degree to which there is a correlation.
Well, I think we can do it. It will be, we'll have to infer a little bit, but we could do a couple of things. We can look at wages and even, you know, maybe skipping the concept of connecting field of study to occupation, you simply say, here's the field of study. Here's men and women who studied in this area. Did they get the same outcome in the end? That's one way we can do it. The other way to do it is to connect. There are codes, there are taxonomies that say these fields of study do connect theoretically to these occupations. It's a spider web of complex connections that maybe is difficult to boil down into recommendations or findings. So I'm not sure if that would be a good route to go. We also have some data, and this is back to Senator Henderson's question. We do have some data that goes occupation, gender distribution, and wage distribution. That's another direction to come to bring this picture together that we can kind of lay out here to paint a picture of wage differences and educational outcomes.
Thank you.
Dr. Robinson? Sorry about that. Ms. Iron?
I'd like to make a comment rather than a question. From the last batch of data that we received at our first meeting, one of the main issues that came up was the disparate number of men that graduate with a bachelor's degree and the dropout rate of women that graduate. And I just wanted to remind the committee that this information only looks at those that have completed their degrees, and I think that we need to remember that in the full context of those that aren't completing too, and what we need to do to ensure completion. Because this Ms. Main's information is very valuable, but I just wanted to put it in the context of the information that we know that we need.
Thank you for raising that point, and that is, if you don't look at things within the larger context, then it hampers our decision making, so I appreciate that point as well. Ms. Main, do you need any further direction or clarification related to further data or how we want it presented to be a continued help in the discussion?
No, I think I have good feedback, and I will be sure that we dig further on completion also, because Ms. Irene's point is very valid in that this is assuming completion and analyzing from that point forward. But in our prior meeting, we know that this completion itself is an issue that we want to address. So more needs to be done in understanding that completion piece as well. So I'll pursue both.
Okay. And then good senator's comments as well, too. Okay, thank you. And also, I'd like to remind the committee that, I mean, we have these discussions now and different ideas are brought up, but it's also iterative. So as you have time to think about it or absorb other materials just in day-to-day kinds of activities, if you think of something else that would help make our discussion more robust or informed, please don't hesitate to let us know, and we don't have to wait until the next meeting. So, anything else on this particular topic? We're good? Great. Thank you, Ms. May. Moving forward, you talk teachers. And I'd also like to take an opportunity to thank Ms. Irene about this suggestion for this particular part of the presentation, and always looking for a path for action, some additional questions were asked about EPOB futures based on the initial commentary on this during our first meeting, and this is to follow up based on some suggestions that were made, so thank you. So this is Ms. Tammy Piper from the Governor Herbert's Education Advisor. The time is yours if you'd like to introduce the people that are with you.
Thank you. There's a red, and then there's no light. There's no green light. I think they're different than in the other room. There we go. Red means it's on. Okay, thank you for having us here. Representative Cheelig invited us to come and visit with you about Utah Futures and some of the new work that's been done on the Utah Futures 2.0 website. We don't have a formal presentation, but I did bring some experts with me today that can help answer questions. We talked about ways that we can engage more of our young girls in business type, connecting them to the business world through Utah Futures and some of the programs that we now have possible, or partnerships, I should say, that we have possible through Utah Futures 2.0. So I want to introduce Kim Bartel. She is from the Division of Workforce Services, and Don Stevenson, who is from the State Office of Education. They've done quite a bit of work on the new version of Utah Futures. This website is available and for all of the students in the state, K-12, also into higher ed and our adult workforce. We now have over 12,000 students who have logged in. This site just launched a few weeks ago on August 15th, and it's still not quite the final site in final form. In January, we will have the final form put together. We are still in the process of building it. We did roll it out about 6 months earlier than we had anticipated in order to meet some legislative deadlines. So are you all familiar with Utah Futures? Basically, okay. Will you just go back on the little dinosaur, the skeleton? You put the back button until you get to. There's a little introductory video, about 1.5 minutes long. Go ahead and push play on that. This gives you a really quick overview. Hopefully, you've got audio.
A website designed to help launch Utahns of all ages into great schools and fantastic careers. At UtahFutures.org, you'll find easy-to-use tools and self-assessment that will help you discover what interests you, the things you're good at, and the kinds of schools and careers that are a good fit for you. From there, the site helps you build a concrete plan for how to get where you want to go. For middle and high school students, your plan might include a complete list of college prep classes you need to take. You'll schedule your SAT and ACT and track admission deadlines for your chosen colleges. You'll also learn about applying to and paying for college, including extras like housing, clothes, and show your mother's pizza. Meanwhile, UtahFutures.org helps adults plan the training and education they'll need to snag an exciting new job. Plus, you can build your resume right on the site and get in-depth guidance on how to find, apply, and interview for jobs. You'll even learn how to negotiate your salary and benefits once you get an offer. To get started, simply create an account from the Utah Futures homepage and begin building your profile. In minutes, you'll be on your way to knowing yourself better and building a complete plan for your future. UtahFutures.org.
The best way to predict the future is to plan for it. Thank you. If you scroll down to the bottom of that homepage, you'll see all the different partners that we have who make this system possible for us, from the State Office of Education to UEN, UCAT, higher ed. We have quite a few partners I think one of the features of this program, this website, that might be of interest to you is the community partners piece. That's something new that we've added, and I'm going to let Kim and Don tell you a little bit more about that.
So one of the things we wanted to incorporate into the career planning site, or education career planning site, is the community, an opportunity for people to get involved because there are lots of people who want to get involved. So businesses, colleges, nonprofits can go on this site and they can register. And then they can send, well, they can put information about their organization that people can view. And then people can follow them. So students could follow an organization that they're interested in, and then that organization can send them messages and calendaring events to let them know about things that are happening with their company. They can also learn about that company and important things that organization values. Again, for colleges, right now we have the functionality available for them to post scholarships. That's one of the important things right now for Utah is making local scholarships available to students that people don't know about. So they can go on there and they can post scholarships. In the future, we hope to have make it possible for internships, job shadowing, volunteering in schools, that sort of thing to be available on there. And then the beauty of it is it's totally secure. The organization registers and they send out messages and calendar events that they don't know who they're sending to. It's just a group that's following them. So students' privacy is protected in this way. So we're really excited to engage this. I was just at the Department of Workforce Services today, and they were training the employees we have that work with businesses to go out and, you know, work with them, the ones that are interested to get registered. So did you want to add anything, Don?
Mm-hmm. Don, do you want to talk a little bit about how we are getting our students engaged from K-12 anyway on the site?
Yes. I'm Donna Stevenson, Utah State Office of Education. I've been out doing trainings across the state, showing counselors how to use this new system, helping them understand how students can create their personal home page. It's really more of a profile because they'll have control over much of the content. We try to guide students through a process that involves exploration, investigating possible career options, looking at programs of study, identifying colleges where they want to go, and also searching for scholarships. And that's one of our Kim and I's evil plans. We make every student look for at least one scholarship for which they might qualify. And for some of our students, it will be a real reach. But we want them to understand when they search by academics, they can find scholarships for which they can qualify with a 2.5 GPA. But if they go to a 3.0, they see that number grows exponentially. So that's part of their plan. They identify at least one career goal, at least one school, at least one scholarship. And then we help them build a plan through that. They have challenge goals. In their challenge goals, we have included attend school every day and get good grades. And for some of our students, a good grade is an A. For some of them, it's a B. For some students, a really good grade is a C. So we try to make it inclusive and still encourage their best efforts and show them what they get in the long run. And with each of those occupations, they're connected to the DWS 5-star rating system. So for any education area, it shows the jobs that will have the most openings with the higher wages. And just trying to help kids have right at their fingertips some tools that can help them make really informed choices. As a school counselor by training, I'm very aware of our tendency in Utah to reverse the national trend and have fewer women graduating from college, and also that information that came out of Utah Valley University that many of our young women plan to go to college, they just don't plan to complete. So I've really worked with our counselors to help them understand helping students make a plan for completion, whether that terminal degree is a certificate program, a two-year degree, or a four-year degree, helping them make good informed choices.
I've got a couple of questions. And to the committee, this is a conversation, so at any time during this, if you do have a question, please feel free to, again, press the request to speak button, which is in front of you, and I'll try to navigate the sound system. Are there components of this that would be applicable to adults that are reentering the workforce? One thing that we have learned is that particularly for women, their tenure is a bit erratic sometimes. due to child care issues or elder care issues or whatever it is coming back and forth. Is this a tool that could also be used by adults who are making career decisions? We have even men or women who maybe want to change their career trajectory to something that's more meaningful to them, either financially or personally. So that's my first question.
Absolutely. From its inception, we wanted to create a system that would serve all of our Utah residents from late elementary, middle school, all the way through the end of their careers. So, yes, all of the tools in there work. I mean, we have a high school orientation or a secondary orientation, but also the adult orientation. Kim, maybe you want to speak to that more, but even in our resume suite, we have an option right there that I'm re-entering the workforce or I'm changing careers, and then we help build resumes from that perspective.
Just quickly, through our partnership, the division that Dawn talked about, we've involved both USOE, Higher Ed, and the Department of Workforce Services and UCAT in the process of developing the system to meet that exact goal that you're talking about. And this is being implemented at the Department of Workforce Services right now for the customers that we help who are changing jobs for whatever reason, and they need to come, they may be getting training money, or they may just be looking for a new job. So we definitely are there to serve adults.
One of the nice things about this program is that this is a Utah solution to Utah Challenge. And with the governor's goal of 66 by 2020, it includes the whole adult population. And so this is a tool that has been developed in Utah using technologies that are out there commercially available, but they are plopped into our infrastructure and our platform. So we can improve, we can add, we can redesign. If there are some things that you see needs that are not being addressed in particular segments of the workforce or population, we're able to respond to that and be very responsive because this is a Utah program. That's something that the evaluation panel, who was tasked with looking at this through SB 34 and deciding whether we should continue to maintain this as a Utah-based site or if we should commercialize it and send it out to an outside vendor, they felt very strongly that this should continue to be housed in Utah, produced by Utah, meeting the needs of our workforce. So we are very open to any suggestions that you might have, or as we go along the way, this is a dynamic website, and we're happy to make changes or address certain populations or needs that you see that are not being addressed.
Thank you. We do have some additional questions from our group. Ms. Barnett.
Thank you, Representative Seeley. Thank you for taking your time to come here. We really appreciate it. I am with the I am the Executive Director of Labor Community Services, and I'm also with the Utah Women in the Trade. And that being said, I work very closely with UCAT. I really enjoy them. I love the program. I've sent many of my women there. But I'm curious, when a child in high school is on your website, there's nothing that gears them, or is there going to be something towards going to the building trades, to the construction? You get a 2-year associate's degree in those programs. They're 4- and 5-year programs. And especially with our women, the non-traditional jobs, that pay so well, the same as a man, the same exact job. So could you tell me if you're thinking of that, if that's on the radar? Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Judy. Thank you. I actually work in the career technical education section of the Utah State Office of Education. We were just in a meeting this morning talking about our vision for career and technical education in Utah. But as far as it relates to Utah Futures in particular, just last Friday, we put in a little assessment that was developed by a young female school counselor in Yeovil District. It's called the Career and Technical Education Pathways Project. So a little pre-test thing, what do you know about career and technical education pathways? And then connecting them to a Holland Code type assessment so that they look at their interests. Are you more of a social person? Do you like to work with your hands? Do you like to do both? And then helping them align to our recognized 60 CTE pathways in Utah, and just promoting very much that idea. that your path to success does not require a four-year degree, but there are many other options for us. And for students, and when I was a school counselor, I tried to help them make three basic choices. What are you interested in generally? Where do you want to go to school, including how much time are you willing to put into training beyond high school, and then how would you pay for that? And we try to work all of that into Utah Futures.
Can I just add one thing? This is very specific, but there's a really fun assessment in there called Reality Check. And you go through it and you get to choose what you want in your life. They ask you questions like, how much do you want to live in a house or an apartment, or you got a big car, a little car, your bike, you know, you go through. And at the end, it tells you how much money you're going to need to support your desired lifestyle. And then it links to occupations that will pay this, and you can sort those occupations by degree. And it's very interesting when you get to that point to see that there are associate's degrees that pay as much as bachelor's degrees for $60,000 a year lifestyle. So there are things like that that are built in them to help people choose the career that is right for them and to help them think as broadly as possible.
And Judy, we also, through those programs, identify occupations that require a certificate program as well. So it's a robust part of that. You're welcome.
Thank you. I might add that the machine goes in the order that the response is made. So I think that it's Senator Robles next, but we shall see. Yes, Senator Robles, welcome.
Thanks for so silly. I guess in terms of the website, and I know you guys presented the website as a particular appropriation for us several weeks ago, is there any ideas of moving into different languages? I mean, a lot of those women that we're trying to support, and I see a lot of your partners receive several funding groups, have them, the state of Utah recently have different rules, but is there several funding attached? There's something called the Office of Civil Rights by the state, so I'm not sure if you guys are planning on meeting any of those things.
Yes, we definitely are. We are short on funding right now. So as we get more money, that is definitely in our plan for the future, is to present a Spanish version. But along those same lines, our site is very 508 compliant right now. We work very closely. We had a sight impaired business analyst on our team. And so the DTS is saying it's one of the software products out there that the state has built that is the most 508 compliant. But we are definitely working toward the Spanish version, and that's part of our plan.
And then beyond Spanish to meet the language needs of many of our other students. We want to find a way. We do want to find a way. There is technology out there. We are hoping to find a way to translate key pieces of information.
Yeah, I mean, some of the compliance, they have a title ticket, and that's based on population size. So Spanish, mm-hmm, which is based on,
yeah,
numbers that you have all the refugee settlements.
Mm-hmm.
So that would totally apply as well. I think even more, I mean, I'm not sure how the federal law has changed from, you know, 5-7 years ago. I think there may be some, like, just requirement pieces as well.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thanks, Representative Steven. I have a couple of questions and a point. In my job, I'm the director of talent acquisition at Zions Bank Corporation, and I'm very interested in my company becoming either a sponsor or somehow networking into the career portal for internships particularly, so maybe we can hook up with that. My second item that I'd like to bring up is, because we are a committee focused on women in our economy, I am particularly interested in the possibility of there being a link on this portal specifically aimed for girls and young women. In my ideal scenario, I would like it right on the very top next to college, between college and community partners, something that says, girls and women. I don't know how that would look, but I am proposing the idea of that being a possibility so that we can, as we continue to gather more information in this committee, able to disseminate it rapidly to the population where we could probably have the most impact. And I don't know the logistics, I don't know how to program the site, but I do know that that would be an immediate win for this group.
We'll all stand up and cheer for that. The really great thing, because we have a Utah-built product, and I don't know the programming either, but I know the guys that do the programming.
Because what I'm seeing is like a video, like that you just opened with, but if it could be a video that was talking directly to girls that said, these are some of the statistics in our state, and we want to make you aware of them. Here are some ways that we can overcome them together. Click on this link to find out this. Click on this link to find what your aptitude is. Click on this link to take your assessment. You wouldn't have to make a whole new site, but I think to direct it specifically towards girls would be extremely powerful.
Well, and then we can build into that the parent helps too, how to talk to your daughter about her future and making plans. Yeah.
So, Representative, you would need to have a follow up plan of action to work with these women and developing something like that.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I'm going to request later on in the conversation about what state of this site is, Senator Robles had brought up a presentation in our Executive Appropriations Committee, so with the passage of the bill and then funding that's needed for it, and then after our initial conversation about this site and asking what it would take, there is a funding mechanism tied to this as well, too, that we need to discuss, and maybe that becomes a priority for this commission and what it is that we want to work for as a measurable to achieve results. Because I agree with you. I think that information on the site would be extraordinary. As a matter of fact, in the Council of State Governments meeting in Alaska a few weeks ago, there was a presentation at the Higher Education Committee by the National Association of University Women, and talking to them about non-completion of degrees and degree choices and what that means and what women and what girls are doing. One of the number one things that the presenter put forward was transparency. Give them the information so they can make educated choices. And I think a lot of times that we need to be able to point them to a place that's comfortable for them with information that may be specific to them. So I think that's hugely powerful, and I appreciate the suggestion and do agree with you. It's something that we can focus on for as a win in the short term, something concrete. But we can talk a little bit. Well, we've got a couple more questions.
Can I just respond to that real quickly?
Sure, absolutely.
We would love to do those enhancements. It is, as a representative explained, a contingent upon funding. We actually don't have any funding right now. This site is, we're on a wing and a prayer right now. So in January, we will be asking for a supplemental allocation because we didn't get an appropriation for this last year. And then we'll need ongoing appropriations, kind of a fiddle with here and there, start and stop, and let's look outside the state. Now let's go ahead and do what you started. It's been very difficult to have ongoing funding appropriated for this. And so we hope that that problem will be resolved in January. And then really, there's no limits to what we can do to enhance this website and make it work for Utah.
Can you expand on that a little bit? Can you talk about the bill that put this into fermission? I know you mentioned the Senate bill earlier, but maybe mention that. And then why is funding tied to it? Because I know that when I first heard that about the funding and trying to get across the idea, honestly, I was like, what? It's a website. So what is that? All it needs is programs and stuff in there and put another link, and why do we have to attach these questions to it? Why do we have to make it so hard and complicated? It was annoying, quite frankly. But it's also a reality. And so help us understand how that works a little bit.
I apologize. I'll just be a very brief overview. I didn't bring my notes from that meeting. But this site was initially started over 4 years ago, and it has to be built. I mean, there's a lot of programming that goes into building this kind of a site and this kind of a portal. And it would get built and to a certain point, and then decided by by different members, policymakers, that maybe we needed something else. Maybe we needed a private vendor to come in. Well, then funding was stalled, and for a period of months or even a year, and then it would be, well, let's go back to Utah Futures. We kind of like what we had. So let's try that again, and let's try a different architect structure where we can plug in outside technologies. And so then that was picked up again. It was not funded during this session, and yet we were in the middle of a rebuild of the whole entire site. So we did that through the cooperation of some of the different entities that you saw on the screen that put up money to continue to build this. And it is quite an extensive venture to get something of this magnitude and with all of the different components of this website built. There are ongoing costs to maintain this type of a structure. If we can have several hundred thousand people that are members on this site that are managing the site and using it, and the partners as those grow, I mean, if there's costs involved in managing this type of a system, and we want to be really good stewards of that money, but we would like there to be money that we can be good stewards of so that we can keep the site operating and continue those enhancements. We think we've got that resolved, and if we are successful in getting a supplemental appropriation in January and then solid funding for the ongoing operation, then we would love to do these improvements and these enhancements that you're suggesting. I think that's a great idea.
What kind of dollars are we talking about?
I believe the budget to maintain this is about $1.7 million, between $1.4 and $1.7 million ongoing. And so it's funded until about now. And so we'll be asking for a supplemental appropriation to get us from January through June 30th. And then beyond that, it's about $1.4 to $1.7 million.
Will it be in the governor's recommended budget, Dana?
I sure hope so.
If we do too.
It was last year, but did not.
Did you have any follow-up there?
I'm curious if there is the potential for there to be private funding for this type of site, just because I know that there are many Utah-based employers that would like to be linked in to this sort of program. A number of larger Utah companies are looking at re-entry programs for women that are just getting back into the workforce and men. But that would like to attract, specific fields of study. Internship programs are huge as we're competing for technology talent. I can just see that there is a possibility of getting private funds for something like this ongoing, and if that's something that has been explored.
Not to my knowledge. Maybe Kim or Don has more information on that. I think that's also a great idea. One possible caveat there is, and this came up in our presentation 2 weeks ago, is that there are some in the commercial world, business world, who want to go into the website and find every student with a 30 ACT score in a certain subject and want to be able to go in and capture those students and recruit them into their program. Because of FERPA laws and protection of student data, we're not able to do that. We are able to do exactly as Kim said, though, and have students be able to sign up for interest areas and have a business say, this is what we do, these are the internships we offer, have that student reach out and make contact. And it can go that way. Students can opt in with their parents' permission at a certain point, but we're not able to allow businesses to come in and gather that data without that type of protection for students.
Well,
but I still think it's a win-win. I still think that's an excellent
idea. I think it could be, and maybe after you get the supplemental funding, you can have somebody on your team investigate the possibility of having more corporate sponsorships. Because I think Raider is an avenue for that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Excellent.
Thank you. I believe the next person in line is Ms. Barnett.
Thank you, Representative Keating. I like the website. I do websites. I mean, I don't do them, but I work on four of them. And I see your pages up there. If you click on career, is that page been built? Or gives all the various careers that one might be interested in, or is it still in the process of being built? I don't know. Click on it.
Yeah.
What comes up?
Everything that you can see right there, you should be able to pull something up.
It's just been built. Because Utah was in the trades. If you click on, say we were up there as a page, you would open our website and you would scroll down to see UCAT and click. and all the various apprenticeship programs throughout the whole state and all their websites and what it requires to belong to the program. You have to have a high school diploma. Many of you have to take an elder test. And some of these things, people just don't even think. Oh, I'm going to go into the construction, you know, because I can't go to college or I don't want to go to college. We believe that that is a career in itself. But anyway, the we would be interested in, and I feel like it's still in the process, but I'd like to see it more diverse as well, just like California Girls' Center Girls' Initiative as well. But yes, it's attractive. They have pictures of employees, more women. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to Senator Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I realize this is new website, but I'm wondering if you have analytics so you can actually demonstrate how many people, you know, you've got in the system, how many people are looking at it, what the results are, is it leading to employment down the road? I mean, I think those are some really invaluable questions to ask. I put on my legislator budget hat, you know, looking for ongoing appropriations, and there's a lot of really good ideas out there, but we can only fund so many of them. And so if you were able to demonstrate real results from this sort of website, I think you would have a lot better chance of getting the ongoing appropriations that you need to maintain and to improve it.
And I hope I wasn't critical. I didn't mean to sound critical on the appropriations end of it.
Oh, no,
you did.
It's not the reality.
And that was a question that came up in the executive appropriations, or at least in the material they sent me ahead of time, was what type of metrics would you use? And there are all kinds of analytics that we can use that come built in with the website. And those would be things like the number of users, what are the number of potential users that we think should be on the website, how many are actually using the website, how long are they spending on each page, how many pages do they visit, and those data are readily available. I think we'll have to look a little bit more long-term and have some longitudinal data if we're going to see, you know, over 4 years, if we've got someone that signed on as a freshman or a sophomore in high school and then track those individual users and then look at the data 4 or 5 years later, what career did they choose? Did they follow a plan? Are they gainfully employed? Is it to match up with what they thought they were going to do? You know, there's a lot of work that can be done analyzing that type of data, but I think the challenge is that it's not a quick fix. It's not next year or the next year. It's probably in 4 years we can start to tell you what those students look like who have been using this new website. And that's the challenge.
And is it set up to analyze? I mean, I realize it's not brand new, so there's no way you can know right now how effective it is.
In fact, if we're building the administrative piece, the back end, we can build it to collect the analytics that we want to, that's possible with data, you know, that you're able to collect. So we can build in what we want.
And I guess if the business partners, you know, if that would be another aspect, I guess, of what analytics we should gather. Which, if you're going to go the private partnership route, you know, would be beneficial for businesses to see that, you know, we get on here and we can help steer people in certain careers or certain, educational goals. So, anyway,
we do also have built in there a predictive analytics system so that we could, with our partners, say, it's a dynamic system, but when kids say, I'm interested in this area, I've friended this business, and we can start pushing to them information about opportunities. If that's all that we're built in.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Great comment. Ms. Burkholder.
Thank you, Representative Zinn. My question has to do with the dissemination of information about the website. And again, as everyone else, I acknowledge that it's new. But I'm particularly interested in women who are either have been out of the workforce for many, many years and need to return because of the circumstances of one kind or another. And
those women both in rural areas as well as urban areas, so all over the state. So my question is, what conversations have you had so far about being sure that information about this site, its very existence, as well as its accessibility is available to women throughout the state?
Well, I just want to say first, we don't have any money, so we don't have a marketing campaign, but we are still trying to get word out. And one of the big things we've been doing since we launched it in August is training. We are training all of the Department of Workforce Services employment counselors all over the state in the rural areas. And I know that USOE has been doing the same thing with their counselors, and our partners at Higher Ed are also working with their institutions to train them and market the site as best we can with what we have. I don't, Don, do you want to add anything?
No. I agree.
Okay. I appreciate that there is funding that you want at this point, but I imagine you've had conversations about where you would go if funding were no object.
Yeah.
And how you would make it possible for women all over the state, adult women all over the state who need or want to work to access information.
Well, and we have asked for some money for marketing as part of the money that Tammy was talking about. So ideally, if we have some money, we have certainly been talking about, I mean, reaching out to people.
Well, and even given the current realities of our funding situation, if you are interested, I could come to your organization and provide training for the people who can't afford with the women who come in into your agency, so that at least we can disseminate information to those routes. We do that also through our library partners. That's one of our partnerships, and all of our librarians will be or are getting trained with this. So that's a huge resource for many of our families.
And for those women that are looking to get back into the workforce throughout the state, having the workforce services counselors trained in this, I mean, that's kind of the basic level right now that we're at, is at least we have it throughout the state and the Department of Workforce Services. So if they are coming back in through that route, we do have, they will have access, and most people are trained, and we'll be able to push the site out.
Dr. Robinson. Anne actually asked the first question that I had. That was what outreach has been done on the K-12 population. But my follow-up question to that is, or maybe it's actually a suggestion, is to encourage you to increase that community partnership list. And I think when I look through the list, there's fewer than 10 currently on that list. And not one is one of our state colleges or universities on that list. And I would encourage you to outreach to those and to push the university to go down even to a lower level, to the departmental level, and have them partners for you, so that a young student, a high school student, or even somebody who's coming from a community college could immediately link up with an area of interest, that community department. Maybe as a student who's interested in biology, they could link up with a biology department, or in sociology, and they could link up with a sociology department. And it's not an expensive thing to do, and I understand your budget limitations here and what you're going to do, but that's simply an email to a college advisory,
right?
And then it goes out to the department, and they link up for you. That's an investment of 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I hope that's all right, because you think it's
great.
Okay, anything else?
Great ideas. We appreciate this so much. Hard to know how much I don't know until I find out how much I don't know. These are really, really good ideas, and we're happy to take them back and take some notes. And we hope that we can continue this dialogue toward the beginning of the year as we maybe have some budget money to work with. The department idea, another great idea. Thank you so much.
What I would ask for is if you all can come back at one of the next couple meetings and go over some of the areas that we talked about. Because not only are we interested in providing ideas and feedback, but also working towards or being champions towards different items that we believe will help meet our goals. And so it would help us, based on the conversation today, have a little bit more information
part of that discussion. So know, please look at us as a potential resource as well. And there are some amazing, energetic people on this committee that will work for things that we believe will help, again, achieve our goals. So the issue of language accessibility came up. So maybe if you all could talk, discuss a little bit more about that. A portal for women and girls. And if you could wave your magic wand, maybe some issues that have come up through this Division of Workforce Services or higher ed or whatever information that you think would be particularly applicable as an outline. Again, if you could wave your magic wand, what would it look like? Thirdly, some thoughts on increasing community partnerships. That would be with the private sector, nonprofit sector, and maybe even faith-based sector too, because I know that a lot of organizations link people with jobs and want to help people, and that might be an opportunity as well. Also, if you could point out specifically, or maybe it's a magic wand question too, related to tech questions, because that's one area, again, the data shows where women and girls are underserved. So where, help us understand where that's discussed on the website is now, and if you could have a specific portal, maybe what that would look like. And then, any other marketing ideas that you have? And the Senator Henderson's point was very well taken related to the analytics. Maybe I didn't, can we measure now who's clicking on stuff?
Okay.
So maybe you can talk to us about that. And then another component of that might be best practices in other places. But certainly one of the interesting aspects of Utah Futures, again, is that we could potentially tailor it to our own needs. So I know that it might not necessarily be an apples-to-apples comparison, but there's got to be something out there that other areas are doing, and maybe they've got information that could help better inform us. Senator, we're talking about your analytics questions and then follow up, because that was a very good point that you made. And certainly, vendors have got to have some kind of information out there about even access to information and how that's helpful. Did I miss anything? Okay. Thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you for
that. I really appreciate it.
It's great. Very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'll underscore the part about the partnership aspect of this too, and what you have the potentiality of us as well for the project.
Very good. Thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you.
Item 4. Women in entrepreneurship, Ms. Thompson. So we've had a lot of discussion at the group where we did during the first meeting related to certain aspects of women being in the workforce, and we want to make sure that we include entrepreneurial or business ownership activities and innovation. So, Ms. Thompson's here today to talk about that, things that are working, and also potential barriers that we need to look at.
Thank you, Representative Taylor. Is it fine?
Yes.
I want to share with you the state of women in entrepreneurship in the state of Utah. This information came from American Express Open Report on the state of women in business in our country, and then, of course, information on our state individually. I just wanted to define women-owned business because there may be a little bit more to it than most people understand. Women-owned business is defined as a business that has majority ownership by one woman or more women, control of that company, which does include the ability to make changes to the company. When we talk to our clients at the Women's Business Center, if they work with a spouse, we ask them, are you able to fire yourself? You need to. We're talking about control of the company and making sure that there's not an entity or a person that has more control than she does or they do. Also, the responsibility of the company for day-to-day management operations, as well as short-term and long-term planning. And most often, they should be the highest compensated employee. So that's the definition of a women-owned business. We'll go to the next slide. As of right now, 2014, the statistic is that one in every three businesses is owned by a woman, is classified as a woman-owned business. This may be a little bit more than you had anticipated, but it's a great thing that's been happening in the country. Go to the next slide. Every single day, there are over 1,200 net businesses created in our country by women. That is double the rate of only 3 years ago. Next slide. All in all, we have 9.1 million women-owned enterprises in our country, employing 7.9 million workers, and contributing and generating $1.4 trillion in revenue. Since 1997, which is when a big pivotal time that American Express Open Report has reported from, we've been able to increase women-owned businesses by 68%, increase revenue of those businesses by 72%, and added 11% more jobs. Basically, the women-owned businesses are growing at 1.5 times the rate of other groups of people, including male-owned businesses, minorities, small businesses. We're leading the pack in owning and starting new businesses. Perfect. So here's some of the areas that have been increasing more than others in for our women-owned businesses. This should look pretty similar to our education and employment as well. Services is up 128%. Administration wage services 60%. Arts, entertainment, recreation 47%. Healthcare and social assistance is 44%. Alright, so our concentration of women-owned firms by industry is listed here. I'm not sure if you can see that very well, but I can share with you some of the areas where women-owned businesses are more concentrated than others, and they include some of the same areas that we mentioned before. Of women-owned businesses, 66% of them are in five sectors alone, and they are healthcare and social assistance, other services, professional scientific technical services, retail trade, and administrative support and waste management. The lowest areas of concentration for women-owned businesses in our country are construction, which is only 7%, transportation and warehousing, 11%, wholesale trade at 19%, and finance and insurance at 20%. And I show some numbers of our businesses here in the state of Utah that really reflect the same percentages as the national averages. All right, let's go back to the other windows for a moment. I also neglected to mention just a moment ago that since 1997, women-owned businesses have added 274,000 jobs to our economy. So those are the wonderful numbers that we hear, and we're very excited to have about women starting new businesses and daring to be the CEO of those companies. But there is a disparity, and although those percentages are pretty high, 30%, the disparity is in the contribution to the economy. And basically, small businesses are not able to compete with publicly traded companies because they only employ 6% of the workforce, yet they own 30% of the businesses. They contribute only 4% of revenue. So let's go to the next slide that really shows us. Most women-owned businesses do not have any employees other than themselves, or maybe just one. You can't really see the table very well, but I'm going to describe it to you. Of the total U.S. firms that are owned by women of this year, that's just over 9 million. Most of them fall in. 8,249,000 firms have no employees other than the business owner. 1 to 4 employees is another 500,000. And from there on down, 5 employees or more were just in the 100,000 or less. Most women-owned businesses are very small. They're considered micro-businesses. The average size of a woman-owned business has not changed for the last 17 years, although businesses have, I guess the number of businesses has increased, but the average size has not. All right, but one good thing is that the growth in the United States for women-owned businesses, the strongest areas of growth are in mid-sized firms. So we are seeing an increase in areas that are more hopeful and also bring more revenue to our economy. In Utah, it's estimated that there are 7,300 women business owners and women-owned businesses in our state. This is our comparison to the other states in our opinion. Utah ranks higher than the national average for growth in women-owned firms, so we're actually above the average. And also, to go to the next one, Utah ranks fourth in growth in firm revenue, which is always a good thing, especially when we're so far below the average for our business. But we rank 30th in the growth of employment. We are not employing very many people on average, although there are some businesses that employ a lot of people. And we haven't really talked about the difference between which businesses are small and which are big. But overall, we're not very good at hiring employees or starting businesses that need extra employees. All right. If you take those three things together, the number of firms, the amount of revenue and the employment, all the growth over those three areas since 1997, Utah actually ties for 9th place with Texas. That's a compliment to us. We are in the top 10 of all the United States in economic clout. So we're going to talk specifically about a few women-owned businesses in our state. And this information is from the Utah Business Magazine's Book of Lists for this year. The very first listing right there is the only company on the list of 50 fastest growing companies in our state. Only one is owned by a woman. The other five below are actually the only, I guess, only five companies owned that are women owned in the top 100 private companies in our state. Only five. Of those, you might recognize some of them. FGA Management is at number 7. And that's over all of our states. She ranks number 7, her company, FGA Management, which of course owns Crystal Inn, Pilot, Maverick, and Flying J, in addition to a whole bunch of other companies. Nicholas and Company, Stampin' Up, AHA Railroad Materials Incorporated, and Woodbury Technologies Incorporated as well. Those are examples of our women business who are leading against the tide that's difficult. Here's some logos of the top companies in our state in their categories. This also comes from the Utah Business Magazine Book of Lists. Of course, the larger ones are the ones who are really employing a lot of individuals and have high revenue. The others are leading in their industries. However, you'll probably notice that many of them are industries that we mentioned before, service industry, administration, waste management, and the like. We don't have hardly any businesses that are in technology or innovation such as energy or in the STEM area. This is a quick list of all the categories that where women are not even listed at all in the top companies in our state at all. The next one, next slide is going to talk about the psychographics of our women entrepreneurs. They are driven by flexibility, more so than the bottom line. They prefer to start lifestyle companies as opposed to growth companies, especially venture-backed high-growth companies. Women tend to gravitate towards services that they already know they can perform. These cost less to start. They don't need to have venture backing to start them, and they usually take less to run, but also the potential for revenue and growth is substantially less. Their first obligation is to work around their families. The next one is a quote from Jennifer Napier Pierce from the Salt Lake Tribune. She says, "There's a reluctance to many Utah women to enter high-end capitalism. For either work-life balance priorities, a slim network of contacts and measures, a lack of fortune-building ambition, or Utah's general cultural aversion to risk. Women don't usually think of themselves as becoming a CEO. Women don't generally, I should say, many of them, they don't actually start a business because they want to, many of them start businesses because of necessity. And we'll find that many of the women who are in the top companies in our state started their businesses out of necessity, or they acquired it through a family event. There are three problems that I'd like to share with you in women's entrepreneurship in our state. The first is fair access to capital. This is very similar to the national average. Although women-owned businesses account for 30% of small companies, they receive only 4.4% of the total dollars in conventional small business loans. the total loans that they have or are able to get are only 16% of all loans for commercial business, and only 4.4% of the money. That means they're gaining smaller amounts of loans, I guess I should say, smaller amount of loans than men, and those loans are for smaller amounts of money. That amounts to $1 for every 23 student loan that goes to a woman's own business. The second problem is lower salary and compensation. Through my study, I found that on average, women business owners pay themselves 80% of what men do. And there are reasons for this, not just one or two, but I think part of it might be the women don't realize that their contemporaries are paying themselves more. It may be difficult to know what others are paying themselves, especially if they're private corporations and not public. The third problem is federal contracting. Go to the next one. Insufficient federal contracting jobs for women. Although U.S. women-owned firms make up 30% of total businesses, the U.S. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Do you have a question?
Sure.
Thank you. Senator Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to go back to the problem number one. Their access to capital, and I just have a question. Do you know, and I don't know if you do or not, but it's not because they're not getting loans because they're not trying to get loans, they don't need as many loans, they don't need as much money, or are they trying and just being rejected?
I think it's a combination of both. I know that the rate of women being accepted and being awarded loans is lower than male-owned businesses, but also many of them don't try to apply for larger loans. They're going to micro loans first, or they're not even starting businesses that need as much as other businesses as well. So it's a combination of both.
And I think that's a fair distinction to make. If they're just not trying for loans, that's one thing. But if they're trying and just being denied at a greater rate, that would be something to maybe ought to be looked into.
I think we should do both.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Robles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just talking to my colleague from Science Bank, so I'll put my hat. So the Science Bank, and in reference to Senator's question, I think it applies in the combination. You know, there are financial institutions that cater specifically for women, and Science Bank provides close to 30 years of help for women, financial group for women, so they specifically gear that to that market. But historically, they've been discriminated. I mean, hence why there's a lot of law at the federal level that protects that, which is the same. And we're taking to the next question here about why they were signing with the federal contract. So, I know the federal law has, in order for you to be a concerned minority owned business, which in most cases are women owned businesses that are the ones that, you have to go through this lengthy process. But if there is, for that specific process to get that, that, I don't know what they call it, designation or title, it's pretty lengthy. And I don't know that in the state, and I used to be the business resource center director for Science years ago. It was very limited, the resources to help people go through that, like the conference, the Foundation of Commerce, of anything related to helping them get the designation for federal purposes. And then I do have a follow-up question, Madam Chair, on that.
Absolutely, thank you. Thank you, Senator. Yes, the Women's Business Center of the Salt Lake Chamber is a resource partner for the SBA, which does offer the Women-Owned Small Business Contracting Program for federal contracting. Our office is one of the only places that understands this certification process, which is only a couple of years old. This program is very new, and it's because, as you'll see in this slide, that the federal government has only set a goal of 5% of their contracts to go to women-owned businesses, although the percentage of ownership is far above that. And they have not met that only one year, and that was in 2012, fiscal year. The Women's Business Center is able to assist clients with self-certification as part of the program, the Women-Owned Small Business Contracting Program. It's fairly simple, but most people don't understand how to do it. And the Women's Business Center is only one location for the whole entire state. We are looking at doing training for other small business development centers and SCORE and other business resource providers to teach them how to help women-owned businesses to self-certify. But there are also other organizations that will certify women-owned businesses in order to participate in set-aside programs or supplier diversity programs with private companies as well. And those certifications cost a lot more money. The Women-Owned Small Business Contracting Program with the SBA is free, but these other certifications may cost the company anywhere from $300 to $500 on up, and take a lot of time to gather all the documentation for third parties to certify them before they can even start to bid on contracts. And you know, the Women-Owned Small Business Contracting Program only being 2 years old, there hasn't been as many contracting specialists who work for the federal government to even utilize that program. And if there really is no funding in that program, that's why they allow you to be self-certified, but not all the contracting specialists are utilizing it as much as they should be.
Because we have allocated the funding for the business resource centers across the state. I don't serve on that committee, but I don't know who serves on that committee, if anyone in this committee, but we do go and reallocate funding. I mean, actually, the only non-funded one is the Zionstan Business Resource Center, which is completely independent, but actually works in collaboration with the other business resource centers. I think because there is state funding attached to it, we should actually ask them to provide those type of assistance for women-owned businesses. I mean, I'm shocked that only, I mean, I knew it was very limited, because I personally helped businesses start those without thousands, and it's not that simple. I mean, the amount of documentation for the SBA to get you in that new that small business tag is lengthy, and it's the only way you can compete on this humongous, you know, federal contract. And they're usually in construction, which just to top it off makes it really difficult. You know, there's not that many women that own those construction companies. So how, you know, that's like only 5%, but even then, it was very difficult. So I remember you can have someone from GOED report on the business, you know, that funding mechanism, and we can have them push for them to have that as part of their, of what they're doing. I mean, they should be able to be more, you know, I was going to say aggressive, that's probably not a nice word, but more, put more emphasis in bringing those resources for women business owners. I appreciate that. That was helpful. Thank you.
Well, the contracting program requires there to be competition. And so you have to actually find another women-owned small business who's also certified for women-owned, according to the SBA program, so that they can even consider either of you. Which is, if you can find somebody to compete with, that's great, because you compete against one other company rather than just anybody. But without being able to find another firm, you aren't able to even bid on it. But they did ask, Maria Contreras-Leach, who's the administrator of SBA in Washington, D.C., did ask for Congress, the Special Committee on Small Business, to change that program to be sole source. Not completely, but at least involve sole source contracts, which means that they don't require competition. They can award a contract to you if you have reasonable pricing and can deliver all of those services. Anything else, Senator?
No, that was very helpful. And really, I think, you know, like I said, I mean, when you have a chance to work for a company, you know, that is so good into catering to all the groups and being inclusive, you know, for us it's hard to think, oh, you know, there are women actually in upper management that deals with this type of huge lending. But when you look at all the other financial institutions, there is some disparity when it comes to providing funding. I mean, period, it's not fair enough funding, they really are not being provided. I mean, especially if they're coming out of being in the household, you know, as caretakers or, you know, care providers, now they're getting into the workforce, they went off their business, they have no history. So they rely on somebody else to have their, you know, their history of work and everything else. The other thing to keep in mind is, you know, I just think if anyone here is married, just the process when you, for example, you purchase a vehicle or your own home, which all of this part of the history you provide, your credit history as you apply for a business, you know, loan, is the same. It's like applying to any other loan. Most of the time, they put towards the husband's name and the top of his loan. And that automatically puts you as a co-signer until you're the main, you know, person that owns the loan. So, you know, we need to start educating women that they need to have a conversation with their spouse or partner that if they're going to be, you know, that's like the de facto. I mean, instead of saying that you go and purchase a car, say, firstly, your husband members with you. So all of that affects when you're applying for loans, because they look at your own personal, well, you know, the some famous 5 C's, right? One of them is that component of your own credit. If you're the wife, usually you end up on a secondary piece of all those loans, and it doesn't help you, you know, as you try to complete the credit score process. So that's part of what I think we need to be more informative to women as they want to enter into a business and then you know, getting a loan for the business. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Redland. Senator Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So going along the lines of maybe hearing from GOED, we also have the budget funds in Utah Capital. So it would be interesting to see too if, I mean, that's the program that matches venture capital money with businesses supposedly in Utah. And I know that there was a lot of protected information there, but it would be interesting to see if there was any outreach, any efforts, and any success at all in providing venture capital to women-owned businesses. Are you aware of any in the Country Girl program?
I'm not aware of any.
I think that's something that's awesome.
That is my idea. Thank you. Just one last thing I wanted to share, if that's okay. Senator Rubas, speaking about women at a disadvantage in the arena of lending, that also happens in a boardroom, it happens in all sorts of business meetings where, especially in an area where women are at a disadvantage or they're in the minority, such as construction or engineering, where maybe meeting with others who are probably male as well, and what happens is that those males will talk to the other males across the table. And they will bypass the woman who may be the owner of the business or the top executive. And that happens quite often. It's something that I hope that is changing, but it's still apparent in our business transactions even today. And that's, you know, at least as far as my experience with our clients and helping them apply for other set-aside programs that have to do with social and economic disadvantage. Anyone else? Thank you. Okay, next item. Number 5, to be made briefing on interactions with Department of Labor Women's Bureau. The United States Department of Labor Women's Bureau was started in 1920 via public law. And their mission is to formulate standards and policies which shall promote the welfare of wage-earning women, improve their working conditions, increase their efficiency, and advance opportunities for profitable employment. So they are interested in what we're doing. And Peter and I received a phone call a couple weeks ago, which resulted in a conference call on September 16th. The Department of Labor has promised us whatever resources and researches they have nationwide or regionally, and then also wants to be doing conversations with us about what kind of data would be helpful to us. One thing that I have raised is that it would be nice to know what the end goal looks like, paint us a picture. If all of these barriers were removed, and women and families could reach their full potential economically, what does that look like for not only the United States, but also the state? Sometimes it's more helpful, at least in my position, from my perspective, is to work toward a common shared vision. And so I have asked for that from them, or maybe even give us examples of other regions where they are doing. They have addressed some of these challenges to provide us with best practices or things that have worked or things that haven't worked. That doesn't necessarily mean that that will be helpful for Utah, but at least it will give us something to go on in a lot of ways. I am going to be back east in the middle of October and actually will be meeting with them. So I'll report back on that. And in the meantime, if there's anything that anyone would like me to raise or ask for or whatever, please let me know and I'm happy to follow up on that. Bottom line is that you're also making waves nationally too. But what it is that you're doing on the mission, which I thought was pretty interesting. Okay. Next, any questions about that? Comments? The goals matrix. This is the handy-dandy multicolored sheet that is included as part of your packet. Thank you to Carrie for helping put this together. I know that you have me on here as providing the overview. I'm going to take the chair's prerogative and ask you to do that. I will say, though, that it's been important to all of us to achieve results. Please note that this is a draft. It is a first stab at this. It is a living document. We want it to be meaningful and measurable and useful. So, Carrie, please, or I'm sorry, Ms. Maine, please take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Seelig suggested that to guide our work, ensure that we're moving toward action, that we formulate some sort of guiding document. And I made an attempt, based on the conversations from our last meeting, to categorize our conversations, prioritize in a sense, but as she said, it's a living document. It was my own interpretation. Just from our presentations today, I have many ideas for changes. So I'm hoping that this is a conversation piece, and it's short enough right now that you can eyeball it and give me your suggestions. The solution column is blank. Let's fill it up. And I think it goes along with the theme that Representative Seelig brought forth when she connected with the Women's Bureau from the DOL, and that is, we need to describe what correct, better looks like, and that's what those solutions should do. So when we report back to the legislature this year and in subsequent years, we can show progress. And I think it makes our time here feel more valuable as well. When we can look down at a document and say, we defined the problem, we measured it, we proved that it was a data-driven identified problem, and we have proposed solutions that are working. So I hope we can open the floor to everyone else to maybe guide me on how we need to change this, add, subtract, rephrase. But this will be our guiding document, so I hope everybody has buy-in for it and wants to contribute.
Thoughts, suggestions?
I can maybe just start talking through my plan. I thought it seemed as though we had four themes running. So I wanted to organize by the themes, and I put the goals also of the that were set forth in the legislation, so that we ensure that as we're talking, that we can trace our ideas back to the goals. But we don't have scope creep. We're sticking with the legislation. The issues, the four areas, I thought were we've got culture, socialization, and work-life balance. I think those all fit together. I thought of things such as the issue that Senator Hedgerson brought forth in our prior meeting about socializing and how it can become our norms of socializing can become barriers to career networking. I thought that was a very important concept that we ought to dig into. So that was one example of something that fit into culture, socialization, and work-life balance. Educational attainment, I think we all agree, is paramount. Then I had tenure, experience, and opportunity as a third issue area, and then fourth is that occupational choice. I wonder if everyone feels as though those four categories reflect everything that we feel as a commission are the issues that we hope we can walk away from this commission, having said we addressed and helped improve women's lives in these areas.
Ms. Burkholder.
I think this is a good list.
there were several things that occurred to me immediately as I was looking at the list, and there may be places here that you have for them, but I'm not sure. So let me simply mention them and see what occurs to you. One is the economic issue of low wages and the impact that that has on women's and families' abilities to be self-reliant. So I think it is an issue that is something that we can't ignore for women. The second is the disparities experienced in the economy by women of color. The study that the YWCA did with the Institute for Women's Policy Research in Washington, D.C. really showed that very clearly. Even if you're looking at women, there are huge disparities in outcomes in a number of different areas, including earnings and economic security. So I think that with a state whose faith is changing, we need to be sure that we are not forgetting the demographic changes and what that means. And then the third issue that occurred to me that I believe came up in our first meeting was the issue of work-life support. And you can use whatever language you want for that, but the point is if women, for example, who are re-entering the workforce or are entering the workforce after the point where they have children and have primary responsibility for the support of their families. What is it that is, what conditions are required for them to do what they want to do, which is to work and support their families? And those may have places in all of this, and I simply am not quite sure where.
I think that I agree with you. These items need to be delineated. Some of them touch on this stuff, but don't address it directly. So I think that they're line items, and I'll add those into the matrix.
I had a request, it's just within the category of partners in the column, just to make sure that we're mindful that there's government partners, private sector, nonprofit, faith-based, whatever, just so we'll make sure that we're open to whatever potential possibilities are out there.
Representative Seawick, would it be appropriate to move this document into some sort of maybe a Google Drive where commission members will be able to pop right onto the document and make changes that they see as appropriate and would see when changes are made to the document, be alerted to that? Do you think that would be an appropriate venue to put the document in?
I think that's a great suggestion. Senator Henderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just touching on the issue that you mentioned with partners, faith-based partners, and we've got a lot of these issues. I guess I have to be careful here. A lot of these issues arise from faith-based beliefs. And I'm not saying that in a negative way at all. I mean, it's my faith, the predominant faith in Utah. But I so relate to this, to these problems. And adding the faith to the partnership is, I think, paramount to overcome some of these issues. You know, education. It's something that I think all faiths want their women and men to be educated, and yet there seems to be some little cultural funness going on here that I don't think is intentional on the part of major religions. I really don't believe it's intentional. So I think adding them to our list of partners is probably appropriate and necessary.
Thank you for that feedback.
Ms. Garnett?
Thank you, Representative Stevens. I believe we discussed non-traditional construction jobs in Southland, and I'm wondering if we can, because I think that's a condition that we, I mean, on the scales, almost in the graph. I wonder if maybe we could add the construction.
That makes sense. We're part of this occupational choice category. To focus on non-traditional jobs as a solution to some of our wage issues that we've got.
Because I see it's part we've got UCAT as well, and that, you know, they have technical as well as construction apprenticeship programs. Thank you.
Could we have a column for identified best practices as well? Other states. Again, I'll say that UConn is unique every state, and if you drill down on a county level, every community is different as well, too, but there are opportunities for learning, I think I should say that over, so we can be mindful of that as well, too, please.
Absolutely, I will add that column to our document.
Anything else? Thank you. Next item, scheduling meetings for the rest of 2014. We had, Ms. Maine, do you want to talk about this? I mean, I think we sent out a tweet, you all, but now you all as an Division of Workforce Services who have taken the lead with this, so thank you. For all your work and helping all this come together. What works for you, and let's take this, I'm sure, the committee to see what sort of device for scheduling works for them as well. Please press the ready to speak button. Thank you.
I think the Doodle Poll device works very well. Maybe if commission members could take time out of their schedules in the next, by the end of this week, to maybe just give any scheduling pointers to us. I'm always out on Fridays, I don't do meetings on Mondays, those sorts of things. We can then formulate some suggested dates. Frequency is something I would like to get Representative Seeley and other members feelings on moving, knowing that we're losing our two co-chairs by the end of the year, and would like to get as much from them as possible. Before then, how frequently would you like to, how many more meetings would you all like to have before the end of 2014?
Three.
Okay. So maybe try for October, November, and December, possibly.
Definitely.
Okay. So if everyone, maybe it could put a reminder on your calendar by Friday to email Gail. You've received emails from Gail on scheduling and other notices. If you could email her and let her know any quirks in your schedule, and we'll do our best to have multiple options for each of those three meetings until the end of the year.
Thank you. I would like to honor Gail. Gail, can you please introduce yourself? The microphone there is on.
Yes. Can you hear me?
No.
Is it? Do I need to push a button?
Probably.
Okay. Is it there? Okay. I'm Gail Tilson, and I'm Carrie Maine's assistant. And yes, I don't mean to be an annoyance, but you do often hear from me on the different things that I need to have to keep this running. So I appreciate each and every one of you, and I know you're all busy, and I know that it takes time to, you know, get me those things that I ask for, but just know we appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks to you for all your hard work and training to bring all this together. We are very appreciative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any last final words
wishes, any of that. Thank you. Thank you all for your time. It is extraordinarily, we have lots of lights. I'm sorry. Okay. This will go in the order that it was requested. Ms. Barnett. Ms. Burkholder.
I have a question about what the best mechanism would be to distribute reports that come to our attention to one another. The American Express Open Report that you referred to, there's an interesting World Bank report on women in development, which we don't generally apply to our own country, but has some very useful things to say. And there may be other reports that come to our attention that we might be interested in. So I'm simply curious about how we might distribute that to one another. Should we just do it on our own, or should we do that in an official way, through Gail? Any ideas about that?
Ms. May, any thoughts?
I think we're happy to facilitate it. I don't know if you want... Representative Steeling, if you want to create a clearinghouse for that, or if you're amenable to just having people directly reach Gail or myself and really in turn distribute to her.
Okay, I think that sounds great. If you'd like to email Gail, then we can work on how and what goes out. And then also, I think you raised a good point too, because some of the things that we discussed and the information can be probably put on the Department of Workforce Services site next to our commission, so that that can be a further resource to people who might be listening to the meeting at the time or later as a research mechanism.
Absolutely. We'll do the website as well.
Thank you. Great suggestion. Is that Dr. Robinson?
No.
Okay.
My comment was the same as Ms. Burkholder. I just read some interesting research from McKinsey company regarding women getting being eligible for promotion, getting into the C-suite, that I think would be very helpful for all of us on this first topic on our matrix. So. If we can just send that to you, Gail, I think it's some information that would be helpful for all of them. And I also wanted to ask Ms. Main about the Google Doc. Will you get that set up through Gail also? Because I think to have this as a live document would be very helpful for the commission going forward to make modifications as we go.
Absolutely. So I will find out how to get that set up. I do know how to do it within the state system, but I'm going to have to work on figuring out how to do it outside the state system. But once we do that, we will alert everyone, share the document, and then we'll be able to interact on that document.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you all very much for your time. I am very appreciative in your efforts to get out here. And thank you for your patience in me navigating the sound system. This is my first time using this console. So, have a great afternoon. Is there a second?
Yes,
great. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah.